Welcome to the Ralph Moore Podcast. Gain the leadership advantage as Ralph pulls wisdom from his bag of over 50 years' experience in planting and leading multiplying churches. Our goal is to help you live as a leader you'd want to follow. You'll learn about making disciples and planting churches, but beyond that, you'll gain practical wisdom about subjects like how to manage your team, handling difficult people, pulling a congregation off a growth plateau, and even money management.
Hey, welcome to the podcast. This one's going to be a little bit different, and I'll explain why. I'm interviewing a good friend of mine named Josh Burnett, who leads a thing called Church.Tech that is going to really bless you and save you a lot of time. I read a statement recently that said, rich people don't buy stuff, they leverage stuff. What does that mean? Well, a friend of mine taught me during a time when inflation was 13% a year, Jimmy Carter was president, truth is I'm really old, that if I was to go to the grocery store and buy just a case of, say, green beans, something you don't even really care to eat, but you got to have them, and put them under my bed, then 1 year later, they'd be worth 13% more than when I bought them. I would have leveraged the little investment that I made in green beans. And I've kind of learned to apply it to every area of my life. Well, AI is really helping me leverage my time. I mean, the stuff when I'm researching things, when I'm writing things, I run everything through AI. It's been a massive blessing. Well, then I get into church.tech. And I can promise you, I mean, suppose that I was able to say, I can give you 150 hours back, or say 160 hours. That's 4 weeks, 4 work weeks, 160 hours. I could give you that back if you would make a small investment that would leverage your time. Here's the deal. Church.tech can save you time writing sermons. It can save you time turning a sermon into social media stuff. It can save you time turning it into little blog clips or little clips for already with the captions added to it for YouTube. It can do a massive amount of things. You're going to learn a lot in this video, and it's going to all be about the one thing, leveraging your time, using less time to actually get more done, be more effective as a pastor, and make life a lot easier on you. I think you're going to really enjoy this one. Here's the problem. If you're listening to this on audio, there's going to come a time when you're going to want it on video. And so the promise I'm making to you is that on my YouTube, under a playlist called Observations, I'm going to put this whole interview up there. And it'll be in segments, just like the what I make it for audio. But it's probably something you're going to want to watch after listening to this. So it's time to just welcome Josh to the podcast.
I am interviewing a guy that I sort of stumble-bumbled into an Exponential event a couple of years ago. I heard my friend Jason Stewart talking to him about a service that he offered called Church.Tech, and it piqued my interest. And so I went over and kind of introduced myself and found one of the nicest people that I've ever met and one of the most powerful tools that I've ever run into. So I want you to just enjoy this conversation with my friend, Josh Burnett. And he is the head of something called Church.Tech that will really benefit you if you engage it the way I have engaged it. So hi, Josh. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Ralph. Thanks so much for having me. Really excited to be here.
I'm really, really excited to have you. I'd like you to kind of start a little bit with, you know, your journey, how you came to faith. I know that you had a lot of involvement in church ministry before. Tell us about that, and then we'll get into Church.Tech. And I really want to get into this as deeply as you feel comfortable getting into it. I want you to promote your product, actually. I've been doing the best I can, but you know it better than I do. And I expect, actually, I'll learn some new tools as we talk, because I'm forever discovering new things on your site. So let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about your life.
I was not born into a family that followed Jesus, and when we started as a family following Jesus, going to church, being part of the church community, it was kind of an act of desperation, and it was a little bit of it's a little bit of a long story, but I'll tell you like the beginning of it to like, you know, piece of my childhood. So my mom teaches horseback riding lessons. And so when I was born, there was they had a farm, and she would teach horseback riding lessons during the day. And there was an elderly couple that lived up the hill from us, and they watched me until I was about 3 or 3.5 years old. And they would tell me about Jesus. Like I have distinct memories of Granny and Pappy is what I call them. Until I was like 7 or 8 years old, I didn't even know that they weren't blood relatives of ours. And so they told me about Jesus. And I have these memories of reading like a picture Bible, sitting in this bearskin chair with Pappy, you know, on his knee, him reading the, you know, story of David and Goliath. I can see that picture in my brain still today. And so then we moved to Louisville, Kentucky, and because we're my dad was at VTech in Roanoke, Virginia. And so we moved to Louisville, Kentucky, and didn't have really any connection to the church at all. And my parents' marriage was really chaotic and combative. And when I was 9, I can distinctly remember praying to kind of an unknown God that they would get a divorce, because I thought they would be happier apart. And one Sunday morning I woke up, and I like, it was the Holy Spirit, I think, but it was just like, we need to go to church. And so I went into my parents' bedroom and, you know, it was like, hey, we're going to church, let's go. And they were like, nah, we'll go next Sunday. Like, you know, and I drugged them kicking and screaming to church that day. And I did that for 5 weeks. I barely have any recollection of this at this point, honestly. And the 6th week they got me up and they were like, hey, we're going to church. And at that point I'd gone to kids' church a few times and I didn't really like it. And so I was like, I don't know. And so I went to big church, you know, with them that day. And the church was Southeast Christian Church in Louisville, Kentucky. It was the only church we knew of. It was like a bigger church at that time, but way smaller than it is now. So we started going, and that church wrapped their arms around my family and loved us the way Jesus loves us. And we became followers of Jesus. And over the course of the next 3 years, I watched my parents' lives be transformed. And so when I was 12 years old, I was sitting in big church listening to Bob Russell preach. He was talking about how we can know that the Bible is a trustworthy, you know, source of information, a lot of like case for Christ type stuff. And I have this distinct memory of being, you know, in big church, seeing him preach and looking around and just noticing that people were taking notes, and they were like, it was this like sort of transformative moment for me of like, this man is helping people connect to God. And in that moment, I felt the call to ministry of like, I want to do that with my whole life. And so that was when I was 12. When I was 15, I found out about church planting through a ministry that Southeast supports in the Northeast called Restoration House. And so went and did like a church planting boot camp for high schoolers as yeah, kind of a test run of them getting involved with that ministry. Which I still think is the most brilliant strategy out there, church planting wise. I think we should be envisioning young people that they could be a part of a movement and you know, and be planting churches in all various formats, obviously. And so, so I fell in love with the idea of starting a church for people that didn't have one and didn't know who Jesus was, like my family. And so, from that moment on, that was the only thing I ever considered. I started dating my now wife like a few months after that, and just kind of told her, hey, I'm going to plant churches, so don't date me if you don't want to, like, you know, move in that direction. That's where I'm going. And she actually loved that vision as well. And so that was kind of, you know, from pretty young age, we sort of decided that's what we're going to go do, and got married when we were 21, and moved to New Life Christian Church, moved to Northern Virginia outside of DC, and was on staff at New Life Christian Church, which I know you're super familiar with, Brett and Todd, and And then, you know, got a ton of training and then New Life and a group of churches in the Baltimore, Washington area sent us out and we, you know, did a bunch of investigation in a bunch of different places, but fell in love with Annapolis. And so we planted a church and, launched like Sunday, in 2010, October, 24th, 2010. But we moved there a year before that and did a community needs and assets assessment and really got to know the community. And the idea was we're going to identify one of the needs, one of the top 10 needs, and we're going to eradicate it in the name of Jesus. Wow. And so, believe it or not, child hunger was kind of the third highest need on that list, which sounds crazy when you think about Annapolis's reputation with the Naval Academy and sailboats and lots of affluence. But hunger hides itself very well. And particularly in our culture. And so, we setting up how I got to church.tech, feel free to interrupt me, Ralph, and angle me in a different direction if you want me to stop and jump ahead or anything, but
no, go ahead. We're enjoying this and I've got time if you've got time, and people love to hear the backstory.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. So, really, it was through that needs assessment that, you know, we started doing a lot of relief-oriented work. So over the first several years of leading that church, and that's kind of how the church came together, honestly. Like we started raising money and putting food into our community, directly into some of the housing authorities or housing projects in the city. Annapolis has the highest federally, well, it did have the highest federally subsidized housing rate of any city in the country per capita. And so so we were working in that way, and then also through schools. But we realized a few years into that, after, you know, putting millions of meals in, of going, this is not going to change the systemic outcomes here. Mm-hmm. Like this is a good thing and we should keep doing it. But systemically, if we want to see the peace and prosperity and flourishing of our city, we got to work upstream, and we've got to change the outcomes that are leading to child hunger being a problem here. And so we started looking for a holistic community transformation model, went all over the world looking at third world models, because those are, there's more of those that are working right now than even back then, and tried to bring those back and translate them into a U.S. context. Realized that regulation keeps a lot of those from working in the U.S. because most of them are centered around some form of creating economy in a, you know, under-resourced, you know, area, or an under-resourced group of people. And it's not easy to start businesses in the U.S. You got to pay taxes, you got to register, there's just a lot of complexities to that. So kind of beat our heads against the wall, honestly, on that front for a while. And went back to the needs assessment and said, you know, we also looked at assets, but we didn't really focus on that very much. And so we went back to that needs and assets assessment and said, well, what are the assets? And one of the things that had struck me while we were doing the needs assessment, and I mean, we spent 6 months almost exclusively on that needs assessment, where, you know, I mean, I knew everybody in the city government. I knew everybody. I knew all the school counselors and principals and board of ed members. I knew the mayor, and, you know, like we knew a ton of business people and all the nonprofit leaders as well. And so we went back to that needs assessment. We were looking at the assets and we were like, you know what? Like, if all of these nonprofits and like government agencies that are truly seeking to see this city flourish had more resources, it would change the game. You know, I mean, it actually probably would systemically be the thing that created more opportunity for people. And so we were like, well, you know, we don't have trillions of dollars just laying around, so that's probably not it, but we do have people. And since all resources flow through people, what if we took the people that are engaged in our church, and our church have been growing pretty rapidly. And so, we were like, what if we just started putting people into positions where they're volunteering in these nonprofits in kind of the intersection of their passion and expertise? Like if they're passionate about the mission and they're using their actual like life skills and professional skills for the benefit of that mission. We had seen what happened with that inside the church when people volunteer on Sundays and then small groups and stuff. You put somebody in that intersection, they're worth 20 people showing up for all the right reasons, but not in that intersection, because they'll get exponentially more stuff done. Mm-hmm. And it's contagious. People want to be a part of something where they know they're making a difference. And then other people see that and they're like, I want to be a part of that too. How can I get plugged in? And so we basically came up with this idea of like, what if we took our people, plugged them into nonprofits in the right role, in the right, you know, with the right mission that they care about. And so we started running experiments toward that end. And I'm probably like, you know, I've probably got a little nostalgia about how this actually started, because what we started with was like, let's keep packing meals. And while we're packing meals, we're going to have, and we've got all these people in these rooms putting meals together. Let's have nonprofits get on stage with a mic and talk about their mission and invite people in that room to come join them as a volunteer in that, you know, in that mission.
So let me just interrupt for a second. Here's what I hear. I hear in a world where we read Ephesians 4, as let's equip people to do ministry in the church as volunteers, you're actually stepping it up, and you're equipping people to do ministry outside the church in the community. And that's really where things start to happen. That's exciting. Go ahead. Keep going. I just wanted to interject that, because I think so often we limit ourselves to maintenance. We're trying to keep the organization going, so we use the best people to do things that they are or are not passionate about. But the goal is always just maintenance. And you guys, when you stepped out of the circle, big things started to happen.
Yeah, they did. I mean, it was, and again, I'm summarizing years of work here, but what we ended up finding was that through plugging people into the right role with a nonprofit whose mission they deeply cared about, that things just started rolling downhill. I mean, we had nonprofits that, because of the additional resources of people, were able to raise more funds, and then were able to start other nonprofits that served an adjacent space or need. We had people from the church that became executive directors of new nonprofits because of us helping them get connected with the right mission in the right spot. And it, you know, it wasn't all roses. Like, there were plenty of failures. I mean, some epic mistakes we made along the way, but we had these, we had enough examples of success that we knew this could be replicated. This could be scaled. And so we started thinking through the lens of like, what if we did this at scale? And, you know, dating apps were massive at that moment. And so I'm looking at that and going like, I mean, I'd done, I don't know, 20 weddings where people had met via a dating app. And mm-hmm. I was like, why can't we do that with a nonprofit and a volunteer mm-hmm. and match them to the right thing? And so we came up with this idea of like, that would actually be a thing that would bring about flourishing. And so we codenamed this project Flourish, of like, you know, I'm not a good matching algorithm. You know, even within our church, one of the failures was like, I would go catalog needs, or we would go catalog needs from the nonprofits, and then we'd catalog what our people were great at. And then, you know, I would not connect the dots email wise after somebody had already started like getting passionate about something. And, you know, so I was like, well, what if we had technology that made it so that the moment of inspiration for a person was coupled with an opportunity to step into ministry, as we would call it, but like volunteerism,
sure,
like immediately and get oriented. And so what this evolved into, and I am getting to church.tech, I promise. What this evolved into is this idea that what if we had a platform that could do this? And so we went out looking for people that were already doing it. There are a lot of people that talk about this. I'm not trying to throw shade at any of them. No one, in my opinion, even still today, and this is 6 years later, really, no one's really doing this in a sophisticated manner in terms of really understanding the needs of the nonprofit beyond what the nonprofit might deem as their app, you know, their needs in that moment, like not just felt needs, but real needs. And really understanding people, how much, like what they care about, what they are great at, and what capacity they have, you know, time-wise to give. And so, so we basically tried to find somebody that was doing it, tried to buy like a license to a platform that was closer, and they wouldn't let us buy it. And so, or they wouldn't let us license it. And so then what we ended up doing was, I've through an incredible wrestling match, with the Lord, because the only thing I'd ever wanted to do or thought I would ever do was plant a church, planting church, and stay there and keep planting until there were so many churches that, you know, we don't need anymore. Go to the next place, maybe, you know. But the effectively, and I'll spare you the long story of this, but I felt God calling me to step into this new season of like creating the platform that would be able to facilitate this happening at scale. And so I stepped into technology in January of 2019, with, I mean, just no parachute or anything, just stupid, like just dumb faith in like that God would provide and come through. And you know, so we transitioned, our elders hired, our executive pastor, and which, you know, was awesome, and we love him and we're so grateful for him. And he's done a great job of leading the church we started. It's called Revolution. And then we spent 4 years just learning every hard lesson. And I thought, I planted a church. How hard can starting a tech company be? Like, you know, I don't know why I thought this, but I thought, well, Satan's not going to be as opposed to this as he was to the church. Like, he'll probably leave us. It's tech. He's not going to care, you know? He definitely, you know, it was rough. We learned a bunch of really hard lessons for about 4 years and finally met our technical co-founder. We actually started making progress on the platform, and we put some products out into the market that were kind of feeder products, proto products that would, you know, help nonprofits actually utilize volunteers more effectively. And then one day we were having a conversation. We were always thinking about like, what are the small versions of this massive platform we're trying to build that's two-sided marketplace with all kinds of crazy complexities? We knew we wanted to go bring the church into, you know, the one side of the marketplace. But we also had learned enough from working with churches that it was going to be hard for us to do that at scale and quickly, which is kind of what the system required that we had designed. And so we were having this conversation about what if we, you know, took some of the AI systems that we're already designing for nonprofits and modified them for the church. And so Matt, our CTO, came to us one day and was like, what if we made an app? And we were just thinking about like funding things, you know? And so like, how could we like pour funding into this mission as well? And so he was like, what if we made an app that summarized podcasts? I think people would pay for that. And I was like, that's really great. Oh, you know what we could do? We could make an app that took sermons and turned them into discipleship content that could then, you know, be delivered to church members and church leaders. I'm a big proponent of sermon-based discipleship, you know, groups or small churches and that type of thing.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe and check his blog at ralphmoore.net.